The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight. I'm feeling awesome. So many things that are little things, red tape, bureaucracy that I had to resolve. Now everything is getting cleared out in my life, and now I'm resolving the more secondary stuff. It feels great to be up to date. Taxes are finished. Taxes have been processed. I had an old account of Bitcoin from up old, back in the days of the public space, where they were paying you 0.001 Bitcoin for the amount of time that people were watching your show on YouTube. There was $600 stuck in that account, and I had to jump through all sorts of hoops. I was delaying this. Today I did it. I did the 2FA security pass and all, so I was able to unblock this money. Thank you so much for the people who had been donating years ago to this system. It was an interesting system back in the golden days of YouTube, where the basic attention token, people were putting a certain amount of money in the form of cryptocurrency, and they were saying basically, drain that money slowly from me to all of the web pages and creators that I watch on YouTube. And I was getting you know, significant amounts of money. It wasn't my main income in any way, but it was cool. It was the birth of the micropayment, and people were dreaming of a world of a world almost magical, where creators would just get money for creating. Oh, the world has changed. Now, this company, the Basic Attention Token, was telling me that they are going out of business in Canada, so I have to withdraw my money, so I was able to get that $600. Marbida, which came to me probably from 3-4 years ago, you know, back in the public space moment. Marby Dog says all digital payments should be BTC. That should be great. Yes, that is amazing. Now, BTC is unfit for micropayments because you don't want to pay $1, $2, $3 of fees for a transaction of less than 10 bucks. So it's still not fit for micropayment, although, you know, there's the Lightning Network. I get it, but... Darko Malfoy says, I got my copies of the Revolutionary Phenotype yesterday. I have a backlog of stuff to read, but we'll get it done this summer. Well, that's great to hear. More attention toward this book, which was very powerful, and it's still very powerful when you look at the developments. I didn't know that AI was coming with these chatbots. You know, who would have thought? Because we had the initial chatbot back in the 70s, you know, that was just saying, hi, how are you doing? Oh, I'm doing good. But now we have the elaborated sum of all human knowledge chatbot. And it's becoming even, it will change even Google. There's less and less people Googling stuff, and they are grokking it instead. Because Grok can be pretty cool and can give you really honest feedback and in a way that you may or may not catch on Google at this point. Google has been self-destroying so much with trying to moralize through search engine, and they're getting replaced now, getting replaced by AI. Darko Malfoy says, the recent AI art meme going around woman with orcs welcome them, saying, please help us. Very good meme. Yeah, because it touches upon this title, Shooting the Shit About LOTR. That was about to be a show 11 days ago or 12 days ago. And then the Iran war came in and I had too much to cover, so we couldn't even sit down for a chill show talking about LOTR, Lord of the Ring, because I want to do a full review of the Lord of the Ring. It's not tonight that it will happen, but I will share some of the ideas that have been emerging in my mind, because today I have just finished watching the three LOTRs and the Bilbo the Hobbit Tolkien edit, that is the three Bilbo the Hobbit movies condensed into a single movie of 4 hours. So now I've rewatched and I've refreshed. These movies are much more important than I expected, than I remembered, because it's always been great to me, because I read these books when I was a teenager and they were very foundational, I realize now. But these movies are so based, it's you almost have to watch them. Yes, extended LOTR version. Of course, I watched the extended version. So I've been watching this for a week and a half every night, advancing through it. And now I have an idea of the whole thing and I have my position on the whole thing. But those are works of great importance. And I believe that I've seen an influence of Spengler and the Fall of Civilizations. I have found, in fact, some forums in which people have already hypothesized this. But it struck me when I was watching The Hobbit series, the three movies condensed into one. And it's all about hard times create weak men. Weak men create hard times. Hard times create a great man. Great men create weak times. I believe that this is what we see in The Hobbit. It's the rotation between an age of poverty and submission to the state and the bureaucracy. And eventually you have to have a rise of the warriors in The Hobbit. So the dwarves, when they come into a city, and yes, the dwarves are the Jews. That was Darko Malfoy saying, Jews are clearly dwarves in the Legendarium. Long hair, big noses, live underground, hoard jewels, look out for themselves only, aloof, and don't trust other races. Anyone saying Jews are elves is high on 6 million X-strength copium. Elves are high-class Northwestern Europeans. The Elvish language he made is based on Welsh. Low-class Northwestern Europeans are portrayed either by Rohan, Dunlendings, the evil men who side with Saruman, or to an extent, dwarves whose aesthetics are Celtic. Absolutely, I agree with you. And I note that in The Hobbit, the dwarves do one more thing that is very Jewish. They arrive in the Lake City and they say, why don't you welcome us? At first they come in as thieves and they immigrate illegally in the Lake City by hiding in barrels of fish, and eventually they get caught, and now they start speaking politically to the crowds and saying, why don't you welcome us? We will bring such wealth to you. If you can just give us the weapons we need, if you can just give us a welcome respite, we will go to the mountain. We will recreate our country there, our homeland there. And we will make you rich because you will benefit from the treasury that we build there. You will be subject to all the trade and all the wealth that comes from it. Now, if that doesn't convince you that the dwarves are Jews, then yes, Marby Dog says, Tolkien said the dwarves were Jews in an old BBC interview. Yeah. If the facts of the narrative don't convince you, then certainly the words of Tolkien himself should convince you. So the Jews are... And this is much more apparent in in The Hobbit than it is in The Lord of the Rings. But in The Hobbit, a couple of times you have Bilbo Baggins, who comes from the Shire. And I feel very attached to The Hobbits because The Hobbits basically are European humans who are sedentary, sedentary farmers and gardeners who care for food, who care for the local place they live in, and who don't get out of it very much. And I feel that I come from a Hobbit-like family, and that although I have traveled way too much for my taste, but I did travel a lot because I was just thrown into careers and stuff. But ultimately, my life would have been pretty much a Hobbit life if I hadn't been trying to seek adventure the same way Bilbo Baggins went on an adventure in The Hobbit. But Bilbo Baggins many times will say to the dwarves, "You have no homeland. That's why I'm fighting by your side. I'm fighting by your side because you have been deprived of a homeland, and I will help you get it back." That is the it's almost J.R.R. Tolkien being prescient on Israel and stuff. It's almost Tolkien knowing about today's situation of Israel, because Israel, they have taken the mountain back from the dragon. And we are now in the post event after the taking of the dragon. Very interesting. What I noted in The Hobbit is it's interesting how it's all about the age of poverty, the hard times of civilization are bureaucratically controlled. So when the dwarves try to come in Lake City, they get reviewed, their barrels get reviewed, and so some bureaucrat decides that, oh, well, you are supposed to import empty barrels, but there is fish in those barrels. These fish are illegal. And he demands that the fish be thrown into the sea. And the shipman is capable of passing the dwarves into the city by arguing, hey, this would be stupid. People are hungry. Why would you throw fish into the sea? I have this fish. I'm just going to bring it in and let the people eat. So you have here the age of bureaucrats. The hard times are the age of the state and the age of the bureaucrats really doing irrational things that the people wouldn't want. But in that age, a warrior cannot arise. Because in that age, there is no place for a meritocratic warrior class to develop. For a meritocratic warrior class to develop, there needs to be a quest or there needs to be a war. And in The Hobbit, the quest is to go take the treasure that was taken many years ago by the dragon. Darko Malfoy says, "Hobbits are English meant to be the Shire. Every country in England ends in Shire, Yorkshire, Lincolnshire, Hertfordshire, etc." Absolutely. So, although I am not in English, technically I'm not an Englishman, I feel as a Frenchman, I feel as much a Hobbit as J.R.R. Tolkien wanted to represent the Englishman. So the availability of a quest that the state cannot undertake because it's too dangerous, it demands too much courage, then, only then, a warrior class can arise through meritocracy of the capacity to kill a dragon, the courage, the maleness that is needed for this task. And this is where you have the rise of Thorim as a dwarf king of the mountain, the rise of the man who shoots the black arrow into the heart of the dragon. But in the hard times, the state keeps this down. In the hard time, the man who became a hero to shoot the dragon in the heart, that man was just a fisherman. and he was kept down by the state because the bureaucrat would be annoying him with counts of number of fish in your barrels and blah blah blah, instead of unleashing his full potential, which is his full potential was a potential for war and for dragon hunting. So that the Hobbit, in my view, is the rotation from a hard time in which bureaucrats dominate to a beautiful time where kings and strong warriors can dominate. And for that, you need to eliminate the dragon. And perhaps I might go to a slightly Petersonian interpretation here and say that perhaps the dragon represents fears. Perhaps the dragon is not an actual dragon, or at least stands for, in that story, stands for a metaphorical understanding of your greatest fear. And, you know, awakening the dragon in the cave and having it go out to destroy the city through fire might be something akin to, oh, end of the line, Joel says, clean your shire. Clean your shire, bucko. So in the rotation from hard times to easy times, there is a treasure. The treasure was covered by the dragon. You awaken the dragon. You awaken the greatest fear in your heart. You conquer it by the sword. You therefore demonstrate value as a warrior, a valuable warrior. And now you lead into easy times. But the problem of easy times is the parasites are already at the door. And this is what's beautiful in this setup, that because from a construction of narrative perspective, I believe that Tolkien may be the greatest. Like in terms of setting all avenues, all of the universe just converging into one point. And that's what's beautiful about The Hobbit. Because now, okay, you have unleashed the dragon, you killed it. Now there's this gigantic creature, there's this gigantic treasure that is not kept by a creature anymore, but that is now guarded by 12 dwarves and a hobbit. And now you see the armies of the entire world converge toward this fort. Because they all have a claim. Oh, the elf wants his little white gems. Thorim, the dwarf, wants his Arkenstone. Everyone thinks they deserve a share of the treasure, but the initial contract was saying this treasure will be shared among the company of the 12 dwarves, plus the hobbit, plus maybe Gandalf, I don't know. But basically it was between a restricted set of people, but already as you enter the age of meritocracy, it's all downhill from here. So what the Hobbit tells you is basically civilization falls, and then something happens, and then war happens, and everyone dies, there's blood everywhere, but the warriors rise, but then it's all down, because the orc army, the elf army, the dwarf army are all there at the door saying, we want a share of this treasure. The state is already in against the meritocracy. Darko Malfoy says, the film makes them seem kind of gay, mainly due to Elijah Wood's feminine performances, but in the book, it's much more of a master and servant relationship. Are you talking about the elves? Or are you talking about the hobbits? Yeah, the hobbits. I think that the movie incarnates them perfectly, in my view. I'm not conflicted about this. I'm very satisfied by the movie. When you look at what they tried to do then with the Amazon series of the hobbits, it's disgusting. He's talking about Sam and Frodo. Yeah, well, yes, they made a psychological aspect to it where Frodo is confused and feels the drag of Sauron. And yes, there is kind of a it's very hard to write the fence between innocence and naivete and gayness. But I think the movie does it as good as they can. And I think they stay very much on the side of naivete and a little bit like the book Candide. Candide is a French book. Was it by Voltaire? By a French author, I think Voltaire. Candide had to be a very naive young individual facing the world. Now, I believe that there's a lot of parallels between Candide and Frodo Baggins and Bilbo Baggins, because this whole these two stories, LOTR and The Hobbit, are both, it's all about youth and naivete and isolation, and poof, you're thrown into the world, and then it's trolls discussing about eating you and frying you, it's orcs. There is a vision in Lord of the Ring that is the contrast between the sedentary protected life and the necessary interface with the adventurous world. And the adventurous world is filled with parasites, and it's all disgusting orcs, less honorable than the other, each of them trying to stab you in the back in some way, plus your own internal hesitation, plus your own conflict with your own company and your own friends. John Drake says, absolutely similar. Yeah, so I hadn't thought about this, just emerged in my mind right now. But yeah, there is definitely an overlap between Candide and The Lord of the Rings. In fact, it seems like it would be the basis of it, because Candide is all about a start in a garden, in a sedentary life, and then he gets thrown into the world, and the world is malefic and evil and parasitic in all sorts of ways. I did my first little arrow towards Stéphane Molyneux today. He's been back on Twitter for a while, and I was like, I'm gonna wait in the dark like a rogue Aragorn in the tavern. I'm gonna wait for him to say something about morality, and I'm gonna bite. So he said, "Don't quote rules at me. Learning sounds is not language. Learning numbers is not math. Following rules is not morality. Only moral reasoning is moral." And I said, the moral signal isn't independent of moral reasoning as laid out here by Stéphane Molyneux. The moral signal is all there is. Waves of air uttered to control other people's muscles is all there is. Moral reasoning, a useful fiction to emit or receive those signals sometimes. Moral reasoning is just higher degree processing of sensory and motor input and outputs that are in this relationship, in the business of controlling others. And the idea that we have things like principles, like moral principles, we have them in the same way the visual cortex as concepts of circles and squares. It's just higher degree processing of what ultimately down the line needs to be done. And sometimes the higher degree processing, you'll have an evolution toward it. Like, you could be going out there and thinking, I can kill anyone I want, but they cannot kill me. Now, that's an asymmetric kind of very hard, it's very hard to enact into a viable principle. But then you can have a principle that comes in and says, no one should kill anyone. Now, when you have a principle like this, first, you're going to find all sorts of special pleading so that down the line, you'll end up arguing that some people do need to be killed. And one example is war. Another example will be self-defense. And you'll find that down the line, the principles can be dismantled morally in the same way they have been created, which is arbitrarily. I hope that I get to interact eventually with Stéphane Molyneux one more time before I die. because I've not been satisfied by his interventions with me. Have been kind of respectful until they weren't. Like, until he suggested at the very end of our argument, as I'm just there to lay out the meta-ethics of moral nihilism, and he ends up saying, I need to go wash myself. You would do that to a child? And it was very displaced, this particular attack. And so I've not been satisfied that Stéphane Molyneux has taken it in. That moral nihilism is a viable path. It's a decent, legitimate, meta-ethical position. Darko Malfoy says they banned Molyneux not for his content, but that he was a gateway node to further right-wing content. I didn't like him much, but it was ridiculous. Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, you know, he said things that were even more white supremacist than me. So, like, in some way, it's YouTube that was probably just trying. And yes, he got arrested and probably fake reported by just hate watchers of him. And I do not advocate for his censorship. But to anyone who says he shouldn't have been censored, but JF should have been censored, I'm sorry, but you're wrong. Stéphane Molyneux said things about the superiority of white culture that I may not even have went there yet in my life. Like, he was presenting the idea that basically these hordes of barbarians that the left is, and even the Native Americans were, that as they saw these big ships carrying these great white people with their great technology, that they were basically fucking stupid to not have adored them. Not have adored them and not have started saying, wow, whatever these white people are, we should we should farm these people. We should keep them around us. They're good. Ruth Sternwood says, shit, more like before Molly dies, wasn't he all crusty and cancerous 5 or 7 years ago? Oh, yeah, I mean, certainly Molyneux is older than me. So I guess, yes, you're correct, before he dies. Ruth Sternwood says, Tolkien didn't have a lot of miscegenating dwarves, though. Molly Mischling, an aberration. I don't know what you're talking about here. you just throw a stimulus at me that I'm like, what are we talking about here? Molyneux? The dwarves, LOTR. I said shooting the shit about LOTR, but I never gave you the permission to wreck my mind with ununderstandable sentences. Adapting Thomas says, Jeff, Molyneux's confusion about morality stems from his misunderstanding on how consciousness can be an emergent property of brain matter, like waves, an emergent property of the collection of H2O atoms. I don't know his full position on physicalism. I've watched a lot of Molyneux content. I don't remember him. Does he take an anti-materialist position? I don't know. I think it's not just this. I think that Molyneux ultimately is probably traumatized by abuse by his mother. He was talking about it even recently on Twitter. And I think it led him down a path of morality must exist. Morality must exist because what my mom did must be objectively bad. And a lot of people who are victim of injustice, unfortunately, and I empathize with him, but it throws them down a path of overdoing it. Because it's totally fine to say Molyneux's mother was bad, but she was bad subjectively by the standard of decent man, decent woman looking at what she has done to him. but she doesn't have to be objectively bad. There doesn't you don't have to have this layer of security. I believe ultimately Molyneux feels a necessity for a layer of security. He feels safe in a world where there is good and bad being defined as absolutes. And you don't need that. You can be an agent in the world thinking, I'm more reasonable than these other people. They're wrong by my standard, but they're my standard. They're not the standards of something floating out there called morality. Frog Eyes says, JF, have you seen the Destiny clip from this week where they comment about Mama JF's disappearance and categorically state you murdered her? Can you sue them for defamation? They don't categorically state that. I've seen the clip, and it's really Destiny showing how much of an uninteresting streamer he is. Because even I mean, this is my life, so I should be interested. And if you're going to say something about a man suspected of murdering his wife, you're scoring on all the check boxes for me to be excited. One, I love police affairs. I love these police interview stuff. I love good cops, bad cops. I love, you know, Cops, the teleseries Cops. I love this, and on top of it, it's about my life. So you should be able to entertain me. But I watched the clip, and Destiny is like, oh, so what do you think? I don't know. And he's with his co-host, and then they're like, I think he may have dropped her in the woods, and she died. And it's this is all you have to... This is your Destiny addition to this great conversation. He's doing like these low-level streamers with 10 views per day. They do better than this. The Alberta Housewives do better than this. Like they're fucking delusional, but at least they're trying to put a hypothesis together. Destiny's hypothesis is, I guess he just dropped her in the wood and she died. Which doesn't even work because I didn't drop her in the wood. And she wasn't seen in the wood. She was seen on the streets of a city. So already it doesn't work. So yeah, I mean, there are people who are just unable to produce intelligent contributions to content. And Destiny is one of them. Another thing that I wanted to mention about Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings 3, very interesting. Very interesting the way... because you have the whole idea of do we kill Sméagol? Do we kill Gollum? And it's always been from the Hobbit times where Gandalf gives the sword to... And Gandalf says this in the Hobbit, and he says something along those lines in LOTR 2. He says, you know, what makes the courage is not taking a life, but it's the decision to spare one. And so there's this whole idea of let your enemy live. And so when Gandalf says this, he says it to Bilbo Baggins, and Bilbo Baggins applies it as he finds the ring of Sméagol, the ring of Gollum. He has an opportunity at some point while wearing the ring to be killing Gollum by sword, because Gollum has no idea he's around. He's become invisible. But he decides to follow the Gandalf advice here and spare a life. And when he says, I found my courage in those caverns, well, he found his courage. He found the ring. The ring gives him courage. But he also found the courage of not killing an enemy. And it all ties down the line, generations down the line, to Lord of the Rings 3, where Gandalf says to Frodo, I don't know yet what role Gollum will play in all this, because Gollum has been switching team. He's been betraying the Hobbits. He, in fact, got tortured by in Mordor, and he revealed Bilbo Baggins Sake Lakote. So he basically sent the some of it was in French from my remembering of the French version of Bilbo and LOTR. So he has revealed, he basically has sent the armies of Mordor and the horses, the dead kings on horses toward Frodo. But then at other points, he has helped Frodo to find the path to Mordor. But he was helping to eventually steal the ring from him, but he was helping. And Gandalf had decided to say to Frodo, I don't know yet what will be the final contribution of Gollum, but something tells me that he has not done his full purpose yet and that we should keep him around. So there's this whole question of, do we kill Gollum? And I think that Gollum here represents chaos. He represents in chaos as an insurance policy against highly principled men. Because the whole idea of sending Frodo to this crazy quest, which is to march through the enemy armies and somehow make it to the volcano of Sauron, that is a crazy idea. And the only reason Frodo qualifies to do this is basically his naivete about the world. His naivete, which gives him a layer of protection against the Ring of Power. Because everyone is too tempted by power. Everyone would be too weak to even get half of the way through. They would be tempted by power. And here we have another potential Petersonian understanding, although it wouldn't be mine. But you know how Jordan Peterson is obsessed about fascism, and how you're always tempted by the fascist inside. And I think that he probably understands the fascist inside in the same way Lord of the Ring presents the Ring of Power. The Ring of Power is like crushing everyone, controlling everyone. Now, we end up finding that Gollum has served not only because he guided the hobbits toward the volcano by giving them the path, but at the very end, even Frodo, the naive hobbit, has a moment of failure just at the moment of dropping the ring into the volcano. And he's like, this is my ring. I want to keep it. So you see that even having the highest principles to guide you toward the accomplishment of a quest, you need an insurance policy. And that insurance policy in Lord of the Rings 3 is the chaos of Smeagol. The chaos of a tortured individual who's just addicted to the ring. And he doesn't have any political grand desires. He just wants the ring because he's addicted to it. And because he's addicted to it, he's going to start a fight against Frodo right, you know, on top of the volcano, lava. And eventually this chaos is what's going to lead the ring to fall. In the fight between a highly principled hobbit, but who has a moment of failure, and a unprincipled, completely chaotic, completely self-driven hedonist, basically. The hedonist was needed because his chaos was needed so that at this particular moment of a second of failure for the hobbit, he needed to be there to fuck it up and to eventually lead the ring to fall where it had to fall. So I believe what Lord of the Rings 3 is telling you is there is a wisdom in managing the elements of the universe and not just being too autistic about pursuing the principled quest, but also leaving some place for error, leaving some place for some things you don't understand. And that's what Gandalf does. Gandalf says, I'm going to send a highly principled, naive hobbit who has the best chance to go as far as possible down the path, but I'm also going to let happen an element of chaos that I have no idea what it will do, but it might kick us down the hill of a kind of entropy peak of some sort. And the entropy peak being what you pursue as a quest, but down the hill being what chaos can lead you to, where chaos can lead you to fall on each side of this hill. Darko Malfoy says, in the books, Saruman goes to the Shire and supplants it. Many take the scouring of the Shire as an allegory for the World War I soldiers returning home to a broken country. Ah, that's interesting. I didn't remember that. But yeah, Saruman is very important, a very important character, because in LOTR 2, the Two Towers, what he ends up being supplanted, but he's ultimately the image of a betrayer, of someone who wants to side with the evil as it comes and has decided to side with it because he feels he can't beat it. You will never have children, says an infrared supporter whose username is Leonidas. Leonidas says, JFG is Brown, who probably killed his wife. Before that, I said that you think ancient Greeks were a different group. I don't care about this. Don't bring me a loser comment from a random comment section from some other place. I don't care. I am not Brown, and that's irrelevant to Leonidas and what he thinks. You know, when they call themselves Leonidas and they have a fictitious pseudonym identity, you can be pretty sure that they're not as white as me. I'm sure that if we get a picture, Cat Lady Genocide says, is this a super chat? No, it was just a guy in the regular chat. I don't care about these things. Darko Malfoy says, ultimately, Gollum technically is the one who destroys the ring and defeats Sauron. It is like Darth Vader destroying the Empire. Yes, absolutely. And he is doing it out of his own self-service. You know, he's just pursuing the ring just because it's his addiction. But combine this irrational pursuit with the quest of Frodo, and the chaos comes just at the right time to protect Frodo from his temptation. That is very interesting. Very interesting series. I can't wait to do a full schematic layout because I want to do a special episode about it. We'll get there in a couple of days, maybe. The persistent presence of absence. The fact that many children are ditching America's public schools is undeniable. Most recently, Nat Malkus, deputy director of education policy, reported that while chronic absenteeism spiked during the COVID pandemic, it remains a serious problem. In 2024, rates were 57% higher than they were before the pandemic. The school is too structured, so there's no, oh, maybe I could engage a little bit with the school. No, it's either you send your school every day or you homeschool your children. And if you don't homeschool your children, you get brought into all these streams of parallel thing that shouldn't be part of the schooling, like forced diversity, forced interactions, forced political brainwashing, liberal preferences creeping in the curriculum through all veins possible. forced confrontation with violence and behavioral problems of other kids on the excuse that these other kids deserve full integration. So you find yourself with a highly structured system that's hard on children, that doesn't particularly prepare them well. In fact, homeschooling outperforms the public school. And on top of it, you get all these side issues, and some of them forced vaccination. And some of them will actually just sterilize your children without your consent. I mean, they're giving themselves the right these days in some liberal states where they will be able to change the sex of your child because it's an emergency surgery. It was an emergency psychological intervention. We had to start calling your son her. And her, she wants to be named this female name, so we're going to call her this female name. Shamrock Shake says, I personally don't think it's good. Not everyone can be plumbers. We need an uncorrupted higher education for our people. That is delusional. You won't fix the higher education system. If it was the problem that there are 60% liberals in our university, maybe I would tell you, okay, we need to pack in our boys, pack in some based university professors. But that is not the problem. We don't have a 60% liberal problem in universities. We have a 99.99999% liberal problem in the university. So it's totally lost. We have to abandon and crash the system. You don't want to save the system by sending high-quality people there. You want academia to eventually fail down the line in the 100 years that follow. So how do you do this? You deprive academia of even talent and access for truth, and you start publishing theories in books and that they will never buy, and down the line in 50 years there's some people who have read The Revolutionary Phenotype who know more about biology than the average university professor of biology. This is my vision for where we're headed. We don't do this by trying to pack in right-wing people in academia. You have zero chance. You're going to be surrounded by Jews, liberals, who all want you out. They all want their brown future physicist who will contribute nothing to physics. So get out of there. You're going to be abused. It's really mental abuse to be begging for money in this system, begging for grants. And then them telling you, oh, well, you can't get a job because you don't have the profile we're looking for. You're not brown. You're not Jew. Okay, well, I'll just publish my true theory of biology in a book. And I will wish for the crashing of the university before I die. I've been given the chance to taste a international haste experiment in the McDonald's sector. So here I am with my big German rusty burger, a quarter pounder with garlic aioli, a hash brown, and an oat flakes covered sweet bun. It's very basic. Very basic, the idea. It's really a quarter pounder with bacon and a hash brown with the cheese on the hash brown instead of the cheese on the burger. But it's good. It's good because it's creamy mayo style with spices. So it does taste a little bit garlicky, I think, the mayo. And here with the poutine, I totally recommend trying, but I think it's only available in Canada right now. Doubting Thomas says, JF, have you seen the numerous Jewish organizations pleading to Jewish people to flee New York City after the primary results today? Yes, I've seen it. And you can see the kosher right is very coordinated on their messaging around New York City. They all made the same joke today. It was to take a quote from Planet of the Apes. You did it, you maniacs! You destroyed liberty! And he's crying as he realizes that the Planet of the Apes is the Earth. And how does he realize this? He realizes this because he sees the Statue of Liberty crumbled. And now it's like, oh, mind-blown moment. I can't believe I'm on Planet Earth all this time. It's Planet Earth that they fucked up. And they all did this joke, but with a turn toward the Muslims. So, I mean, they're not being very subtle about it. This is the bigotry, the allowed racism. Because you may think that racism is not allowed because racist and white supremacists are being treated in our culture worse than rapists, worse than pedos, really. There's really nothing much worse than you can be than a racist. But there is a form of racism that is extremely welcome by Zionists and Jews. It's racism against brown Muslims. Now, this one, they like it. So, you did it, you maniacs. Basically, the planet of the Muslims. So the Muslims are the apes that have taken over. And they have not taken over the whole planet yet. They've just taken over New York City, according to these right-wing voices. So even Charlie Kirk, you become what you import. Yes, Charlie Kirk, but why say this today? Why say this as we have this this Muslim Ugandan candidate on the Democrat primary side? Why not say this 7-8 years ago when the Groyper were telling you to say this? And you were fighting against the Groypers. It always happens. They always end up integrating our talking points, but too little, too late. Too little, too late. So personally, this guy, shares of firms tied to NYC real estate tank over fears of Mandani's rent freeze, the Zoran effect. So yeah, some of his projects include the rents will not be increasable. So whatever rent you have set, you're going to be stuck with it. You're going to have to raise it percent by percent. You're going to have to ask permission to New York City to charge more for your apartments. So a complete destruction of the free market. And we know where this leads. It leads to New York becoming an undesirable place to live, where the apartment owners will have to cut corner arounds. There's going to be some events like inflationary pressure and changes of money printing strategy and rates by the Fed that will totally fuck up these apartment owners. Because imagine big inflation year. Suddenly a lettuce doesn't cost $2, it costs $4. All salaries rise, everything rises, except the apartment rent. So it really never works, we're gonna make it illegal for prices to rise. It never works. You're going to end up with people who are careless about the apartments they own. And within 20 years, you're going to have a third world city in America, New York, ladies and gentlemen. Now, do I care that much about Mamdani arriving? Because here's a modern Muslim of the left, I guess you could say. He's a Muslim-looking brown guy, but also he's going to tell you that trans people's lives matter, and the only way we can fix the anti-trans attitude of New York City is by firing all policemen. He literally wants to defund the police. He wants to cut them their funds. Now, a lot of people are interpreting this, and he even wants to arrest Netanyahu. So being on the side of brown people against the Jews of Israel, he is interested at enacting the arrest of the ICC warrant against Netanyahu. Now, interestingly, an ICC warrant for arrest does exist for Netanyahu, but generally, there are countries who accept the International Criminal Court, others who deny it. Now, the US denies the ICC. So, the arrest warrant has no validity legally in the US, but that's an interesting question. What if Netanyahu was to land in New York at some point, and the New York City decides that they believe the ICC exists? That's an interesting conflict here. But it's not my war. Because ultimately, the Jews are in panic mode right now. They're preparing basically a Holocaust-type exodus. We have an exodus in 2025. The Jews want to get out of New York. And I don't blame them, but at the same time, they have caused a lot of this situation. First, the Jews have caused brown people to hate them because of their behavior in Israel. Then the Jews have caused brown people to be imported in our white nations. And then they have caused brown people to concentrate around metropolitan areas and to eventually get power. So the Jews get what they fucking deserve. You deserve to be ruled by brown people. You've done everything along the line from I live in a white nation to now we're here. So I don't care. I don't care about the fact that this guy... I find it hilarious that it's happening. Like Bitar Worldwide says, we urge all Jews to evacuate New York City. Evacuate New York City immediately. Thank you for your attention on this matter. This gives you an idea of how fast these people will drop the nations that they don't care about ruining. And it's because of how fast they can detach from these nations that they don't care that much about preserving their historical state and historical demographics. So if someone has to care about demographics, it will have to be the non-Jews. We will have to just be strong and say, no, look, you don't mess with the demographics of our nations because you won't pay the price for it, because you'll be on a train the minute it goes bad. But we'll pay the price for it because we intend to stay here. We are hobbits. We are elves. We are humans. We are the ones who don't get to run to our mountain, the mountain of dwarves. So this is why the LOTR stuff is so important, because the Curtis Yarvin has been working hard for creating a public misperception about who are the Jews in LOTR. They're not the elves. They're the dwarves. And all the other people, they have their standing place with homogeneous nations. And we don't want you to mess it up. What else do we have? Trump is calling this new candidate for New York mayor a communist lunatic. Sure. He's all about trans lives matter and let's abolish the New York police or defund it. We have Tulsi Gabbard, who has turned very pro-Trump these days, despite the fact that initially she had a finding of her intelligence community that Iran was not on the brink of producing a nuclear bomb. Now she says, new intelligence confirms what POTUS has stated numerous times. Iran's nuclear facilities have been destroyed. If the Iranians choose to rebuild, they would have to rebuild all three facilities, Natanz, Fordo, and Esfahan, entirely, which would take likely years to do. So I don't know the reliability of this. I'm willing to believe it, but I'm also willing to say I'm not sure. How do you know these things? How do you know the extent of the damage on Ford Row? I'm not sure you know that. Because it's one thing to say something, but you have to tell me you have to tell me how you know things. Like, people are sending me links, and it's never interesting. It's always retarded. Do you guys in the regular chat ever have anything interesting to say?
Tomorrow, to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Elvis's 29th birthday, Turner Classic Movies presents The Lost Elvis Movie.
Join me, Elvis Presley, with the sexy Anne Murray. And my number one pals, Charlie and Ray, as we go on a wild adventure, man, in my new hit movie, The Planet with Some Apes. Boy, this planet's lousy with monkeys. Monkey business, 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 monkey business.
Why do you send me this? I was about to live the next 20, 40 years of my life in absolute peace, die happy with what I had done, and having not been exposed to this Elvis Planet of the Apes crossover. Why did you waste this? Why did you waste 45 seconds of my life? We find something exciting in at least the beginning of an attitude by Trump to be questioning Israel. And this will be my last commentary for today. Look at what Trump says when he talks about, at first, his ceasefire was being violated on both sides, apparently. He wasn't happy.
Israel says that Iran violated the peace agreement and the ceasefire agreement. Do you believe that Iran is still committed to the peace?
Yeah, I do. They violated it, but Israel violated it too.
Are you questioning if Israel...
This is already a historical statement. Israel violated anything? When's the last time you've heard this? I mean, they literally just bombed civilians. They carpet bombed a civilization of brown people. And I've not heard this from a US president. They violated.
Israel, as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I'd never seen before. The biggest load that we've seen. I'm not happy with Israel. You know, when I say, okay, now you have 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. But I'm really unhappy if Israel's going out this morning because of one rocket that didn't land, that was shot, perhaps by mistake, that didn't land. I'm not happy about that.
So just a U.S. president not being happy about the behavior of Israel. This is what I was calling for just a day before Trump said this. I was like, maybe we're headed there, long shot, but maybe we're there. Well, we are there. And this is to be celebrated because now Israel can be not perfect. Now Israel can be called out, and eventually Trump will have to understand that no leverage on Israel means no war end. That the same way he had to dunk onto Zelensky to eventually get a resolution between Ukraine and Russia, you're gonna have to dunk on Israel sometimes, even if it's just in words and saying I'm not satisfied, I'm not happy. You're gonna have to have something against Israel, because when you have a party that is the only side that truly wants war and takes actions to cause war, they're the ones that need punishment. And, you know, I wish that it went harder than words. I wish that it went something like this. After Israel does its little troublemaking behavior, and now they're using the opportunity of the Iran ceasefire to do even more humanitarian violations in Gaza and elsewhere against the Palestinians, Trump should just be making a serious threat. Like, we're not going to kill any Israelis in the process, but I'm going to bomb a major building of yours. I'm going to literally just bomb a major building in Israel if you keep doing that kind of stuff. Because if there's no boundary on Israel, there's no end to this war. They will always try to tickle the demon. Like, try to get everyone to react. Hey, US, do something. Hey, Iran, do something. False flag here, false flag there. You have to put Israel under some sort of boundary. And Trump seems to have started that yesterday. That is to be celebrated. That is it for tonight, boys. Greatest White House says it doesn't mean much in the grand scheme of things. Israel will always get its way. Well, it didn't get its way in New York yesterday.